Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Wednesday, September the 5th. And we will wonder this hour, are boys today different than boys of yesterday? Has the digital age changed childhood activities and interests completely? Do boys today only like to play video games or play on the computer? Or do they still want to know how to build a go-kart or a treehouse or make a paper airplane? How about astronomy stuff or making crystals or collecting tadpoles and spiders and snakes? My brother used to collect the creepy things. Do boys still do that today? Well, to make sure they still do, our guest and his brother have co-written a guide for boys, from ages 8 to 80. Called The Dangerous Book for Boys. No doubt you have heard about this. It's been a bestseller for many, many weeks. So apparently there are a lot of you who are young at heart or want to teach your boys these activities. What do you remember from your childhood, things like this that you used to do that you're afraid boys today aren't doing? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Con Iggleden, co-author with his brother Hal of The Dangerous Book for Boys. Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, this has been on, I've been reading about this book for months and months, it seems, but I see here it is just now making its U.S. debut?
It's been out, I think, for 17 weeks now. And there were 17 weeks in the New York Times bestseller list. I mean, it's been absolutely wonderful. It's nice finding out that people in America care about exactly the same things I do.
Is this version slightly different than the English version?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had to get rid of cricket because no one really, except for the English, like cricket. In fact, the English shouldn't really like it. They're doing so badly at the moment. Conkers as well, horse chestnuts on a string. I don't think anyone in America does that. It's a fairly ancient, English sort of game. But, some schools are banned it, in fact. Which is one of the things that prompted me to write the book. I was getting so fed up of that whole culture of banning everything. And it's not just a British or an American thing. I mean, in Ireland, 40% of schools are banned running in the playground. This kind of thing is a little bit sad.
And I'm sorry, that the Congers was the name of the horse chestnut.
Yeah, the horse chestnut is a kind of brown nut, and you put a hole in it, string a shoelace through it, and then whack it against another one. And in theory, they explode, but in the history of the world, no one's ever been hurt by a conker. But schools have banned them with the three words, just in case. It is pathetic. I mean, we keep hearing of schools banning things like paper aeroplanes in case they put someone's eye out, or dodgeball in case someone gets hurt. And then they seem to forget that, in fact, just thinking on this particular day when Ken Fosses has disappeared, that we need to learn, our limits as kids. Because, to be honest, we also need to be heroes. And you can't be a hero without learning courage, and you can't learn courage without learning a bit of fear. And, we need people like Ken Fosses. I mean, I hope he's, alive and well. Mm-hmm. But, his example is the sort of thing we should be aiming at, not deliberately forgetting and pretending is a bad thing. And I don't see where the new generation of heroes is going to come from if we wrap every boy in cotton wool and pretend he's just a girl who doesn't wash as much.
Is that the dangerous part of The Dangerous Book for Boys, that some of these activities might pose a little risk to the participant?
Well, I mean, we didn't really set out to make any sort of major points. I mean, I was just writing a book for my son because I found there weren't too many books around. And also recalling some of the things we did as kids. I mean, like making a bow and arrow and, going to hunt a rabbit and this sort of business. I mean, putting that sort of thing in was in some ways a deliberate thumb in the eye to the attitudes that all children can be safer if they're kept inside on a PlayStation. And, I was trying to recall those times when we thought danger wasn't a dirty word. And, we knew it was fun to fall out of a tree. And even if the only thing you learned was it hurts to fall out of a tree, that's still a good thing. And you've learned something useful,
Yeah, yeah. And not all of these things, though, are all inherently dangerous that you have
no.
in here. Lots
oh,
of.
Oh, God, I've got Shakespeare, not too much dangerous about Shakespeare.
So why do you call it, though, The Dangerous Book for Boys? Just catchy?
Well, no, it's partly because it's the sort of the attitude, if you like, when danger was fun. Also, I suppose you could argue that, you know, making a bow and arrow and a catapult and a treehouse and a workbench and a go-kart all involve sort of, you know, tools and some element of danger. But, of course, we, you know, we didn't put explosives in there and we didn't want to call it the suicidal book for boys. it was partly, you know, it was to celebrate that attitude when danger was interesting and it just hadn't become this awful, dangerous word that we had to, you know, that we must protect our children from the, you know, from dawn till sunset. And it's a terrible shame because, I mean, anyone, to be honest, I don't know, do you have children yourself?
No, I do not. No.
Parents, I get it from parents that we're much more relaxed about this now. Parents, particularly of boys and girls, know that they're different. Boys are interested in different things. You know, they can say, yeah, this is great. Thank you. Know, this is a book for boys. Thanks so much. People without kids, sometimes they say, well, why is it for boys and not for girls? And you get the whole attitude. And I'm thinking, this is fine. You know, I'm quite happy to have fathers and sons read the book, and that's it. That's good enough for me. That's the job done.
Yeah, but girls are not forbidden from reading this either. I mean, girls like to build tree houses with their dads too, don't they?
Yeah. This is the big question. I mean, I honestly expected a big backlash when I wrote the book. I was expecting there to be people, with placards outside my door saying, how can you write a book just for boys? But, you know, I'm not saying that girls can't do it. I'm just saying that I wasn't thinking of girls. I wrote this for boys because I was one. And it reflects my interest and my brother's interest as well, because he's into a lot of different things like astronomy and all this. We didn't write it for girls. Now, you know, I'm not going to say a girl can't walk into a shop and buy it. I'm in favor of sales of my books. But we wrote it for the boys we were, and it turns out we wrote it for a lot of boys who are still around, thank goodness.
Yeah. And, in fact, the producer of this hour, Carmen Jackson, said, here's, you know, you've got to do this. And I said, you know, well, you know, gee, I don't know. I don't have kids, and maybe a different host should do this. And she said, you've got to do this. Your husband will love this book. So he's 54, so I've got a 54-year-old kid.
Yeah. Well, yes, the oldest letter I've had was from a man of 87. Who wrote me a very nice letter, and the youngest was an email, of course, from a 10-year-old kid. So it does seem to appeal to different generations, and I like that. It's a surprise to me. I mean, I genuinely thought that we were going to sell just a few copies, and my brother sort of said, will we get into the top 10 in Britain? And I said, look, honestly, no. Because, you know, thousands of books published every year, only a few get in and all the rest of it. And it just turns out we walked into a sort of debate about health and safety and about, you know, wrapping up kids and about treating boys the same as girls. And to my enormous surprise and pleasure, there are a lot of people out there who care about the same things I care about.
Yeah.
And that's a great feeling, I'll be honest. It's being part of a big gang.
Yeah, besides the, the fear factor or the danger factor, you were concerned that boys today weren't really learning how to tie knots or do these things that you did as a kid? Instead, they're spending too much time in front of the computer games?
Well, absolutely. For that, I mean, that was definitely part of it. That they're, you know, becoming pale and obese is not actually healthy or safe. I mean, that's a kind of peculiar irony. It isn't safer for your kids to be stuck in front of a PC all day. But there's also things. I mean, we put in stories of adventure, for example, true stories from history, like, you know, Douglas Bader, because we thought that they weren't being taught in schools anymore. I mean, I taught in schools for 7 years, and, you know, I was very sad to see what was happening to history. The greatest single repository of great stories, that we have available to us, just wasn't being taught, and, you know, stories of courage are crucial for boys because girls grow into women and they know they will. But as boys don't know they're going to grow into men, they're not quite sure often how it happens and when the magic moment is that they can say, hey, you know, finally I'm a man. So that what they do is always look around at other men and see how they behave. And role models are crucially important to boys. And that in our culture, if you go back thousands of years and hundreds of years, what we've always done is tell them stories, whether it be Greek myths or Roman stories or the story of the Spartan boy and the fox cub and all these things. And for some reason, in the last generation, in that we're talking literally 30, 40 years, we've stopped teaching these stories of courage. Not as many. We still have some. That's why I sort of, you know, mentioned Fawcett, because in a way his life is one. And I was very interested in the competition between him and Richard Branson in Britain. And Ken Fawcett won, I believe, with the round-the-world balloon. And I was hoping it would be Richard Branson. But there you go. These stories are important, and these examples are important to boys.
We're talking with Con Eagledon, co-author with his brother Hal of the best-selling book, The Dangerous Book for Boys. And we welcome your questions for him and your thoughts about these various activities that maybe you did as a kid. 1-800-642-1234 and Madison 263-1890. Back when video games and computers didn't occupy all of your time, like building a treehouse or a go-kart or skimming stones or learning how to tie knots. How about the perfect paper airplane? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up this afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins between 4 and 6. After 5, Ben's guest says the United States is not the world leader in health care. And he'll tell us why after 5 o'clock. We're talking about the games that boys used to play and the things that boys used to do and maybe still do. They will, thanks to the best-selling book, The Dangerous Book for Boys, which was co-written by our guest this hour, Con Eagledon. He and his brother Hal put their heads together and came up with all sorts of activities and information that every boy should know. Let's talk a little bit about the Dangerous Book for Boys Essential Kit. This is what every boy needs. A Swiss Army knife, a compass, a handkerchief, a box of matches, marbles, needle and thread, pencil and paper, a small torch, a magnifying glass, Band-Aids, and fish hooks. I think that's it. Is that it, Con?
That's pretty much it, yeah. That'll do you.
Now, wait a minute. A small torch? That does sound a little bit... Why does a boy need a small torch?
Well, it could be something like reading a map at night. You can get them in little key rings, you know, those ones that are visible very far away. They're brilliant things.
Oh,
and the thing is to get it into a small tin. I mean, I don't know, you know, tobacco tins. I don't think they're still sold. They're very hard to get hold of. But old tobacco tins are just about perfect for this.
And the magnifying glass, I remember what boys used to do with magnifying glasses.
I know what you're going to say. And yes, I'm afraid, of course, I wouldn't recommend, you know, burning insects, but that is very often, you know, what children do. And, of course, it is also useful for lighting fires. I mean, that is one thing about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is part of an essential kit. There's nothing wrong with it, really. Some people sort of object to having a pen knife mentioned, but, you know, there was a time when every boy had a jackknife, and it wasn't the time of the Great Slaughter. So, you know, it's important to remember its attitudes and not the actual pen knife.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about a Swiss Army knife. If you've ever tried to do almost anything with a Swiss Army knife, it usually folds back and cuts your finger. So, you know, on the other hand, it, you know, has a corkscrew for when the boy is older and he gets interested in opening wine.
Yeah, you know, I know what my my now 54-year-old husband used to do with his box of matches. Are all boys have a little bit of pyro in them?
Well, yeah, it's strange, but yes, probably. I was fascinated. But yeah, I mean, I found out how to make a fairly simple incendiary device with matches. But no, I'm not going to go into the detail of that.
Even a needle and thread, though. What's you know? You want them to be able to sew up the hole in the sack or something?
Well, I've sewn up a dog before when he was still unconscious.
Oh.
I mean, you know, it's not so good when they're conscious. Even the best dogs will struggle. It's about skills often. I mean, my dad used to say, you know, you might not be an expert at something, but you can be competent at just about anything. And I like that. It's the kind of idea of being competent at as many things as you can possibly be. I mean, I'll never be a great carpenter, but I can make a workbench. You know, I could do simple joints.
Mm-hmm.
It takes me longer than most people, but I can do it. And there is something weirdly deep bone satisfying about doing something with your hands like that, where you sit back and you think, yeah, right, you know, that's a workbench, that's a go-kart, that's a treehouse, that's a bow and arrow,
mm-hmm.
you know, even a catapult, something simple like that. You made it, and it's good. I like skills. I mean, electrical circuits, growing crystals, I like knowing things. And, I mean, people forget that about men because they call it geeky or nerdy, and it is. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just, you know, if you go to a science fiction convention or something like that and everyone's dressed as Spock with the big ears, you know, people sort of say how incredibly geeky and nerdy, but they forget that it means men are interested in stories again. You know, we like stories, we like characters, and it's not really recognized as a male characteristic, but of course it is. We like stories and we like characters. And, you know, this book is all about sort of recognizing those things that men are interested in. That's all.
Jody in New Glarus is our first caller. Hi, Jody. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I'm so excited to hear about this book. I have four unschooled boys, and finding their own way and making their own path is something that we, my husband and I, really value. And I guess my point is that, and the reason I called in, is I grew up with girls. I have a sister. My mom had sisters. My dad had sisters. So I was not around boys until I had mine. And it was very shocking and surprising to me at how different they are than girls.
Mm-hmm.
They were much more physically engaged.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once I came to terms with that, I was a much better mommy to these four boys. And letting them find their way in using things. You know, today kids can't use knives for obvious reasons, but my boys are learning how to whittle and how to use a knife and use it in a way that's safe and fun and, you know, just things that a lot of kids today don't get to do. So I am really excited to read your book. Thank you so much for writing it.
Good for you.
Yes, yeah. thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And is whittling in the book, Con?
No, I didn't do whittling. But, I mean, that's what I mean. Every time I mention it to someone, they say, oh, you've got rockets, right? Everyone loves rockets.
Mm-hmm.
And they add something in. And, like, you know, we almost had to stop telling people about it. It was just, I think we walked into something almost by accident. All we were trying to do is recapture the things we did as a kid, and, as I say, write it for my son. But, you know, somehow we found that there's an awful lot of people who've been crying out for, you know, something like this. Just a book that said, yeah, boys are interested in peculiar things. It's not just, you know, fighting, football and alcohol. It's, you know, we can be interested in, I don't know, Latin phrases, the origins of words, a bit of Shakespeare, astronomy, latitude and longitude, loads of mathematics. And how does the world work? How does the world spin west to east? I mean, why is that? You know, and why does the sun rise in the east in both hemispheres? I mean, I love this kind of thing. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just the way we are. As long as people are sort of willing to say, yeah, you know what, boys and girls are different.
Thank you, Jody. Chad in Eau Claire is with us now. Hi, Chad.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Very good.
Hi.
Good. I just have a question. My son, he's into the video games and so forth. He does like to go fishing, but, you know, I can never get him to put a worm on a hook. And he's 12 years old, and I just don't understand why he won't dig in there. I used to love worms when I was a kid.
You know, that gross putting it on the hook thing, huh, Chad?
Yeah.
Dad used to do that for me, and that's one of the differences, maybe, Con?
Well, you do get, I mean, at the end of the day, you do get less squeamish mm-hmm. as you get older. I mean, it's just one of those peculiar things. You know, I remember sort of being quite upset by seeing a dead cow the first time mm-hmm. when I was a kid. But, you know, you get used to this sort of thing. There's nothing to worry about there. When you say worm, do you mean a proper worm from the ground, or do you mean a maggot?
A worm from the ground, a nightcrawler.
Yeah, because I'd get him. I think maybe he wouldn't mind so much about maggots. Maggots are pretty horrible.
Yeah.
Well, worms are no, you know, treat either. But I suppose just you think that because it's gross that he won't mind hooking it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Thanks, Chad, and good luck with that. You have fishing in the book. Don't
yes,
you?
I do. Yeah.
And you even have hunting and skinning your own rabbit and the whole thing.
Well, it was something we really wanted to do when we were kids. I mean, I was a terrible hunter. I did manage to catch a raven once. I think it must have been ill because I had an idea that I wanted to train it to attack at my word of command. I'd read a book called Beastmaster where there was a character who could do that. So we went out to capture the raven, and unfortunately it died shortly afterwards. We had it in a chicken run. I mean, it's a sad story. And then we tried to cremate it. I'd heard about Viking burial, so we covered it in lighter fluid and built a little cairn of bricks and lit it and sat there with our hands crossed and said all sorts of prayers. And the flames went up, and then the flames died down again we'd cooked it. Because it takes some thousands of degrees to actually cremate a bird. We just managed to cook it. So, you know, these stories don't always work out.
did you do these things with your dad, or were these things that you just did on your own?
Well, some things we did on our own, some things we did with my dad. I mean, my dad was a maths and physics teacher who was also a qualified woodwork teacher, so he was a sort of mm-hmm. absolute classic of his type. And he was very, very sensitive about his tools. And, you know, I tell you, whenever I took his tools out in the garden and used a screwdriver as a hammer, I mean, there was hell to pay. But, you know, he was a man very much also interested in things like poetry. And, you know, he wasn't just a maths and physics teacher. He'd also quote lines from Vitae Lampada, play up, play up, and play the game. And that means a lot to me, to be honest, because if right from an early age, it showed me that men can be interested in poetry and a good story as much as, you know, maths mm-hmm. and anything else. And that's important. You know what? We're a little bit more than just sort of what is it, left brain, right-handed thinkers.
Yeah. What does your son like to do the most that's in here?
Well, my son is just 7, so mm-hmm. he likes the paper things. I mean, the water bomb he's managed to do, and the paper aeroplane, I think he's probably best at. But he's like every 7-year-old. He's interested in lots of different things. I mean, your original question was, are boys today different from mm-hmm. The boys that used to be? And the answer is definitely not. I mean, a 7-year-old or a 10-year-old is a blank slate. It's completely how they're brought up. If you sit your 7-year-old, yeah, I think that's early enough. If you sit him in front of a TV for 6 hours a day in the holidays, then yes, he will become desensitized to certain things. We know this. You know, he won't want to go out. He won't be so healthy when he's an adult and so on. If you do things with him and send him out just sometimes on his own, just so that he can get bored and think of things himself, then he'll be a better man for it. And, you know, most parents know this. The pleasure for me has been in finding out that most parents know this. There's no great mystery anymore.
We are talking with Con Eagledon. He is co-author of The Dangerous Book for Boys. And we have a line for you if you have maybe an activity that you, as a boy, used to do as a kid, something that you hope your son also would like to do. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. You're certainly welcome to call if you're... the mom of boys, or a woman who has a question for our guest, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. But our guest says he wrote this book with boys in mind, things that boys would like to do, activities and information that boys care about. Wenzel in Amherst, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Joy and guest. Mm-hmm. I was... raised in the middle of Wisconsin, kind of on the flats there at the edge of Stevens Point, but I joined the Boy Scouts, and it just opened up my mind, and I learned so much from that. And then when I, became an adult and had kids, well, it was a logical place, and I had two boys. It was a logical place for me to be as an adult and them as, you know, these adolescents. And I ended up being the scoutmaster and, you know, really studied the book and philosophy and all. And I, it sounds to me like you've kind of taken a lot of those ideas and kind of put your own spin on them. But one last comment, and then I'll take your comments off the air. A person is grown up all too soon. And if you can, you know, get out into nature and be a kid just a little longer. Yeah. Then those skills and that creativity and the joy of a cheap entertainment, building fires and swimming and all, is there with you for the rest of your life. And you maybe aren't quite as hooked on all the stuff they bombard you with. Yeah. For the rest of your life. Yeah.
Oh,
thank
yeah.
you.
If I could just thank you. Mm-hmm. If I could just respond to that last point first. Some girls sometimes say boys are immature, but you know what are you meant to be doing at 10? If you're not jumping in a pool, you know, from a very high place, then it's a shame. You know, why should you be planning your pension or your mortgage? Absolutely. No, I'm completely with you on this.
Yeah. Well, is this like Boy Scouts?
Oh, God, absolutely. I'm a huge fan of Boy Scouts. I was one, so was my brother.
Mm-hmm.
These are important. These are practical skills. I understand. I know what Braden Powell was trying to do when he put that book together. I mean, he was worried about, decadence? He was mm-hmm. worried about boys losing their guts and their grit. At the end of the 19th century, and I must admit, to some extent, there's a part of me that's worrying about exactly the same things. What I've done as well is to add in, as I say, you know, the things that I think boys are interested in. Not because I was setting out to say I wonder what boys are interested in, but these are just reflections of my own interest. The nice thing has been finding out that boys are interested and men are interested in this as well. Stories of courage and things like grammar. I mean, I put in 3 sections of grammar because I noticed that my parents, my dad was born in 1923, he's got a fantastic command of their language, and somehow that nuts and bolts approach, giving people command and control of their language, has been taken away in schools. And you think, well, you know, how can you not realize that the earlier generations take satisfaction from that? So I put in things like that because boys need nuts and bolts. My brother once said someone had ever told him there were only 9 kinds of words, he'd have damn well learned them. And this, this is part of the attitude. It's if something's difficult, you don't make it easy. You grab it by the throat and hang on until it's dead. debt. You know, that's what you do. That's the attitude. Why not?
Yeah, and you do. I noticed this. You have badges at the that if people want to can print off from your website.
That's just marketing, but that's, you know, that's the publishers being having a bit of fun. But no, we didn't actually plan badges. I'm really not trying to take over from Scouts. Mm-hmm. No one could, or they shouldn't either. It's a wonderful institution, and I'm pleased to see it so healthy. I'm a little worried, if I can get serious for a moment. Mm-hmm. I'm a little worried about this business. I keep hearing about girls going into Boy Scouts, despite girl guides, you know, already existing. Because I mean, I was reading something on the internet talking about the dangerous book for boys, and there was a scoutmaster there, and he was saying that there is a kind of male compassion, that if he's on a 10-mile hike after, and 5 miles into it, a boy sits down and says, you know, my feet hurt, I can't go on, he'll obviously check him medically to make sure there's nothing too serious, and then as an act of compassion for that boy, he and the troop will try and make him complete the 10-mile hike because it's better for him in the long run to do so. And he was very worried that if he was forced to accept girls, and rightly or wrongly, girls, you know, perhaps couldn't do the 10 miles, couldn't go as far as the boys. There are physical differences. And he was worried that he would have to be softer on the boys, and therefore the boys would never learn those lessons, those crucial lessons at the edge of endurance, if you like. And I can sort of see that point. I think, you know, part of this is just saying that boys and girls are different. They have slightly different interests. You don't always have to sort of mix them up and pretend they're all the same. And then, as I say, the nice thing is finding out that the pendulum has swung, and I haven't been having my head bitten off the moment I say something like that, which is just fantastic.
Oh, I did read, though, some quotes from various whatever social scientists saying, well, you know, not all boys are the same either, and it's kind of dangerous to lump everybody into a category like this.
No, obviously, I mean, I don't accept that, and it's true there are different kinds of boys and, you know, all the rest of it, but at the end of the day, I think, you know, no one's being forced to buy a book. I mean, as I say, I wrote a book which reflected my interests both as a man and as a boy, and my brother's. I shouldn't forget him. I keep doing it. And, you know, it turns out there are a lot of people interested in exactly the same things. You know, as I say, no one's ever being forced to buy a book or forced to make a treehouse. Mm-hmm. There'll always be some people who prefer different things to the subjects in this. That's fair enough.
And if a boy doesn't like one of the activities or articles in the book, that doesn't mean that boy's not a real boy.
No, I mean, to be absolutely fair, although it's pretty white. No, I'm only kidding. It's tempting to think, it's tempting for me to use it as a sort of litmus test for, are you a real boy? But no, that wouldn't be fair, that wouldn't be fun at all. Boys are different, and they also, I mean, obviously there's a huge range, and they develop at different sort of rates. I mean, as I say, I've become less squeamish as a man. I'm oddly unsqueamish now. I can see in, you know, just about anything and not be bothered by it. But, you know, as an 8-year-old, I'm sure I hopped around and jumped if I saw an animal squashed by a car. You know, you do. Mm-hmm. But you change. So, no, I wouldn't use it as my litmus test for being a boy. Not quite.
Carol in Madison, you're on the air.
Hello, thank you. Yes, I guess I would just like to say that I think this book sounds fantastic. There's a wide range of great ways to get kids to inexpensive and physically challenging ways to get kids to become fine young adults, which I think is our purpose as parents, I myself being a parent of a 7-year-old boy. But I would, of course, I guess maybe not of course, but I would disagree with the idea that this couldn't be a book for girls. And I'm wondering, I guess you already started to address it, which seems to be that you're anti-femme, especially for boys. But my original question is, why isn't this book also for girls? And, that's my question.
Okay. Can I? Is it okay to answer that?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The basic truth is that, of course, that we didn't set out to write it for anyone. That I wrote the book that reflects my activities and the things that I liked when I was a boy and a man. But I wanted to. It's not quite as simple as that, because I did want to write a book for boys, partly because, as I say, I had a son, and I wanted him to say or to realize that there are some things that are masculine virtues. Now, they might be feminine virtues as well. You know, if I say courage is a masculine virtue, then there's a separate argument as to whether that's a feminine virtue for women. Fair enough. But I'm not even going there. I'm not in that arena. I'm saying courage is a masculine virtue. Boys like stories of courage. Here are some stories of courage. And you know what? Give it to a 10-year-old, and I guarantee you they'll enjoy it. That's all I'm trying to do. The whole thing of trying to write a book that pleases everyone, I just didn't try it. And honestly, I think that's why the book's been successful. I wasn't expecting it to do well. I wasn't trying to reach a wide market. I honestly thought it was just a kind of hobby book for me, for my brother. We were going to sell a few copies, and then I'd get on with my usual career of writing historical fiction about Julius Caesar and Genghis Khan. This is the book that I didn't expect to do well. I think that's exactly why, though, because I didn't try and please people, and sometimes, you know, you can spoil a good idea by trying to please too many people.
Well, you certainly struck a chord. Let me remind listeners, we're talking with Khan Eggleston. Eggleden. He is co-author of the book, The Dangerous Book for Boys, along with his brother, Hal Eggleden. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We welcome your questions for him. We welcome those activities that perhaps you used to do as a boy. The importance of passing along these types of games and activities like paper airplanes, building a go-kart, building a tree fort, using a magnifying glass to burn things. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9. Well, he's played both a real president and a fictional one on TV. Soon-to-be presidential candidate Fred Thompson will be, I think he's going to be on Jay Leno tonight and officially unveiling his campaign via webcast on Friday. We anticipated his entrance into the race, and this week it's official. Kathleen Dunn and her guest will talk about Fred Thompson's candidacy and what it means for the race coming up after 9 o'clock. We're talking about dangerous and interesting and fun things that boys like to do, talking with the co-author of the best-selling book, The Dangerous Book for Boys. Art in Appleton. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joey, and good morning to your guest.
Morning.
I couldn't help but catch your mention of people or boys needing examples of good role models and stories of courage and things of that nature. And being British, you know, I think, you know, I think if possible you look at Winston Churchill as one of those people.
Yep.
But he certainly also had a all boy side to him, despite the fact that he was rather sickly as a young lad. But he also had a real level of mischief in him and things, and loved to do things like arrange train crashes with his toy train set.
Oh.
and loved to just ram them together and things of that nature. But, you know, sadly, I see that his references to him have been removed from the British historical, the state school history curriculum.
I believe he's been downplayed, yes.
Yeah. And it has, yeah, and has hardly any mention of that has been made anywhere. And I mean, who was, you know, I'd like to, if you could name, you know, one or two more people in history that are more important than Winston Churchill, I'd like to know who they are.
No, but okay.
Yeah.
No, it's a fair enough point, and you're absolutely right. The strange thing is here that there is a completely different, there are two different strands going on. I speak to parents and I speak to, if you like, normal people, and they are completely in favor of recalling these stories of courage that make up a culture. And then you go to the schools and you find in England they're teaching Henry VIII and the Nazis. And you think, how on earth can you drop off all of that really wonderful cultural background and just teach, you know, the king with six wives and the Nazis? Not that both subjects aren't interesting and important, but there's a heck of a lot more. And it's a culture which is the culture of the Western world in many ways, and the birth of, you know, democracy and civilization, although I suppose the Greeks would probably claim that for Athens, but let's leave that at the moment. It is extraordinary. And all I can say is that our institutions are always slow to catch up for this sort of thing. But, you know, I've discovered through email and all the rest of it, people talking to me, there are an awful lot of people out there who care about this, and they just need to make their voices heard. They need to turn those institutions around a bit and to say, look, stop banning running in the playground, stop banning dodgeball, stop banning paper airplanes and conkers, stop pretending that our history isn't important to us, and stop mucking about with boys, because, you know, we don't need to lose the boys. If a society loses boys, we're in real trouble for the future.
Did you know that Winston Churchill liked to crash his toy trains?
I hadn't heard that. You know, the thing I always love about Winston Churchill is he took part in one of the last cavalry charges in history. The sword over the horse's ears, full gallop, all the rest of it, and he saw a nuclear bomb go off. And as a single life and seeing sort of technological progress, I mean, imagine that. He went from swords to a nuclear bomb in one lifetime, and that's pretty amazing.
Did you ever put a penny on a train track to see what would happen to it?
No, I didn't do that.
My brothers did that and got in trouble for that. Betty in Camp Douglas, hi, you're on the air.
Hello, I just have to, this reminds me of the days when I was a nurse in a summer camp. We had three little boys, and they went to summer camp. And my nursing paid their tuition. And one day, and I was always on call, you know. And one day, two boys came running to me. There was always the front guard telling me what happened. Joey got bit by a snake. And pretty soon, down the trail comes Joey with two boys holding him up, and Joey's as white as a sheet. And I took Joey into the infirmary and tried to comfort him, and I just couldn't comfort him. I could see it was just a simple bite from an ordinary snake. And anyway, the counselor came. He had gotten the snake. And so finally I said to him, Joey, you know what? I'll bet you when you go back to school in the fall, you'll be the only kid in class, maybe the only kid in the whole school, that got bit by a snake. Boy, his face pinked up and he lighted up, and I could see him thinking about what a hero he was. Mm-hmm. And I still think about him as when I think about kids out in, we've got little great grandsons now. And what it must be, I mean, he's still remembering that just like I'm remembering it.
Yeah. Khan, any reaction?
These are important. But if you, to be honest, if you speak to any man and ask him about a memory that made him the man he is, something that's important to him from his childhood, it'll almost always involve an injury, or sometime when he was afraid. And try that. I mean, honestly, try that with the next man you see around you, because these things are important to us. It's where we learn about fear. Maybe it's just jumping off a roof or something like that. It's where we learn about courage. And men, as I say, sometimes girls know that they're going to grow into women, but men just don't. They look, or boys don't. They look around at other men to see what a man is, and they try and copy it. It's as simple as that. And if the man is a sort of violent, abusive drunk, then we'll know they'll copy that. If he's has some of the other masculine virtues, decency and self-discipline and a sense of wry humor, you name it, integrity, then he'll copy that. I mean, that's what boys do.
What
things.
What about jumping off that roof, breaking more than a leg? I mean, do you worry at all that you're encouraging boys to, risk their life?
No, I mean, no one wants to see a kid get hurt, of course. But the thing is, I mean, just to give the jumping off the roof example, I remember saying to my brother that if he jumped off the garage roof at home, it was about 8 feet off the ground, I said that it wouldn't hurt if he said the words, fly like an eagle.
Wouldn't hurt.
Exactly. So he jumped off, knees first into a rockery. I mean, it was unpleasant, and I was on the roof, and he remembers me, sort of looking over the edge of it and saying, no, you didn't put your arms out, come and try it again. The thing about this, I mean, it teaches you perhaps it just taught him not to trust his brother, and that's not such a bad thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe that was the smart lesson.
Not to be so trusting. But seriously, we all have these moments when we learn, about what being a bloke is, and in many ways, I mean, my bit of, the sort of wry humour, the deadpan humour, I mean, my father flew in the RAF in World War II, and all of his stories are usually very grim, but they're also filled with black humor. I mean, extraordinary. I'll tell you one of them if we have time.
Sure.
He knew the crew this happened to. It was a Lancaster bomber crew, and they had been told there would be no operations that night, so they'd gone to the bar, the Naffy bar, and they were drinking heavily. And at about 10:45 in the evening, a message came over the airfield tannoy that they were taking off at 11. So they gave a great cheer. They got onto a jeep. They wove across the airfield. Now, to give you an idea, the pilots were so drunk, he couldn't actually get up the steps. So he had to be lifted up the steps, and he was left in the cockpit, blearily flicking at the switches, while the rest of the crew went to their positions. The rear gunner went to the back, and the radio operator took up his post and so on. And then at about 5 to 11, there another message came over the tannoy saying, no, all operations were cancelled, too much cloud cover. So a great cheer went up again. They all came off. They got onto the jeep. They went back to the bar, and they carried on drinking until about 2 o'clock in the morning, where someone finally said, what happened to the rear gunner? And this, they had to piece together what happened to the rear gunner. This is what happened. He had fallen asleep in his little glass blister at the back of the plane. And when he woke up, it was in pitch darkness, and he began to draw a series of incorrect conclusions. He decided, as there was no engine noise, the plane was in the air and clearly had been shot down, and at this moment was plummeting towards the ground. He called out for his friends. No one answered, and he decided they had all parachuted out and left him. He tried the hydraulics of the turret, and it didn't move. More evidence that the plane was shut off and shut down. So he went into his emergency drills. Now, the turret of a Lancaster was so small you couldn't even carry a parachute, so he had to reach behind him, put the parachute on, do up all the straps, wind open the turret by hand, and then he dived headfirst out onto the concrete 10 feet below. Now, they found him sort of spread-eagled. Now, the thing is, I think that's funny. It is, I suppose, it's a story about a drunk man hurting himself, but honestly, it's amusing to me.
And I was like, oh, no, he hurt himself, and you're laughing.
Oh, absolutely. the idea of a man diving headfirst out of a stationary plane sitting on a quiet tarmac airfield somewhere, absolutely, it cracks me up. Now, I think he had concussion. I'm not sure he didn't have a hairline fracture for a few days, but it still makes my dad laugh. And this, we're talking about 60 years later, when he thinks about it. I mean, there is a lot of grim humor in the way men look at the world. It's the way we handle stress and pressure, of course, and that's important. All this book is about, really, is saying, you know what, we do think a bit differently, and we're interested in different things, and that's not such a bad thing. It's not the end of the world.
Yeah. It does remind me of my brother-in-law and my little nephew at the time, just a toddler, and the toddler went down a snowy hill on a sled, but not dad probably should have been with him, because there was a bump and a tumble and a snowball going down this hill that was my nephew. and he probably, it probably could have been safer than that, but we laugh to this day when we remember that story.
Yeah. Susan, the reactions to it will be important too. I mean, that's the culture of a family. It's, what Uncle David did when he was run over by the car, what he said afterwards, his expression. I mean, these things, that they form culture. We've always passed on our values by telling stories, always. Mm-hmm. And it's very often to do with bravery and courage and betrayal and lies and, deceit and all this sort of thing. And we pass it on by telling stories around campfires, or nowadays we pass it on by telling history in school. And it's, for some reason, we've dropped that ball.
Yeah, let me go next to Susan in Coon Valley.
Good morning.
Morning, Susan.
Good morning. I have a comment for you. Just a couple of things. I want to back up to your comment you made about the Boy Scouts and, running 10 miles. First of all, I think that was a very sexist statement that you made in regards to... Let me finish, please, that a girl could not complete 10 miles. And the other thing I want to comment on is that I think you are extremely biased. I can understand all your stuff about boys playing with jackknives and whatever.
Yeah.
But you know something? Sometimes I wonder if guys like you that write a book like this are not afraid of women becoming more empowered. And therefore, you become fearful of the fact that when you look at this world and you look at how men have led and misled, I'm wondering if you have some fear.
I don't feel afraid. I mean, I'm a father. I'm obviously a married man of 10 years. I've got two daughters. That's my next big adventure, I suspect, because I did grow up with brothers, but I didn't write this book because I wanted to make a statement about women. I was making a statement about boys, and the weird thing is, it's sort of when women do say something like that, and you think, look, I'm sorry, but it kind of wasn't about you. Mm-hmm. I'm just reflecting my own interests and the things that I think boys are interested in. You know, it's not a great political statement. That's the weird thing about it, unless you take it as writing anything for boys is a great political statement, in which case, I guess we'll have to discuss that.
Yeah, you get a lot of this, though.
No, I don't.
No,
I mean,
you
the
don't.
Funny thing, that's why I said, hooray, there's my backlash, because honestly, I have had, I mean, well, I did an article for the Washington Post, and I think I got about 800 emails. It was a heck of a shock to me afterwards. I did not realize people were going to write that many emails. But I got about 800 after that because they put my email address on the bottom of the article. And I had, I think, I'll just get the numbers right now, about 800 positive and about 11 negative. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, you know what? That's a ratio I can live with. Mm-hmm. I'm quite happy for that. It was more confirmation that the pendulum had swung. I know that, you know, as I say, that I'm not putting down women in any way. I absolutely adore women. I even married one. But, you know, I was trying to write something for boys, and I know that will always hack off a few people.
Let me get another woman on the air. Carrie, yeah. In Spring Valley. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I wanted you to maybe address how it seems there's such a trend for boys to be pushed into sports only. And I'm a Cubmaster also, and I'm in the positive category as far as I'm not a backlash person. I'm teaching boys all the things that scouts teach, which is a lot of similar things. And I'm really happy that you did this because it's great to have get away from the stigma of you can't be in both scouts and have all these skills and the sports, and I'm constantly in competition with getting boys to be in both.
God, I'm sort of surprised there is a competition here, because for me it's all about craft and skills, and in my experience, boys like to learn things, whether it's a coin trick or tying a knot. I don't know why. You know, you could argue that, again, that it's sort of hardwired, but boys like to know how to do little magic tricks and things like that. And I think if they don't, it's only because they haven't been exposed to them or they haven't been bored enough. Maybe if they haven't spent enough time on their own with nothing to do except a coin or a card trick or something like that. We love crafts, and I used to love scouts. In fact, I had a female scout leader, our Kayla, and she was you know, absolutely lovely, and she taught me all sorts of interesting things. No problem with that at all. That's good. I think the only problem is if you decide that boys are just about the physical, because we're definitely not just about the physical. We're about crafts and skills and learning things, and that might be how to throw a football properly, or it might be how to do a coin trick or a card trick, or it might be learning about the Battle of Thermopylae and Cannae in you know, Greek and Roman history. Why not? I mean, these things are male characteristics. Just to go back to the previous caller, they might also be female characteristics. I really don't know. You know, grew up without sisters. What can I say? But they are definitely male characteristics, and there's nothing really wrong with that, I think.
Yeah. Well, let's do one last call. Fernando in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air. We're almost out of time.
Hi. I just wanted to share something that was kind of instrumental to my development as a young man. I'm not sure how much people should emulate this, but when I was in high school, I was put into one of those gifted and talented classes where I'd get excused twice a week to go basically spend the afternoon in a room where people would just tell you you're gifted and talented all day. You know, do little exercises to jog your brain, I guess. And it's probably good for you. But I learned kind of quickly that I could basically leave my class and just catch a bus down, go all over Milwaukee and play hooky all afternoon. And so what I would do is I basically, within about a year, I knew every single bus route in Milwaukee. I got to know all the neighborhoods that suburban kids are told not to go to. I learned where all the libraries were. Like, I got to know the whole UWM library. I learned all the theaters. You know,
We get it, Fernando. You learn the wilds of Milwaukee, and you probably like our guest book. We're out of time. Thanks very much for being with
you.
Us. Con Eagledon is co-author with his brother Hal of The Dangerous Book for Boys. Thanks to Carmen Jackson and to Leo Duran for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.